Okay, good morning. Okay, good morning. Today we're learning Perek Vav Be'ezras Hashem of the Gvurais Hashem. What he's going to be doing here in Perek Vav, there?
He's coming soon, by the way.
Okay. What we're going to be doing here in Perek Vav is actually beginning on a phase of the Gvurais Hashem. What do I mean by that? That we're beginning on a phase of the Gvurais Hashem, as we're familiar already with from other Sifrei Amaral, like for example the Netzach and the Tiferes. You know, when he attacks the subject matter, such as here, where he is attacking. Is he calling in the line?
Maybe.
You see?
It says 908. 410908.
I think that's a cell phone. Hold on. He's not there. Okay, if he wants, he should call again. So, again, one more time, let's get started. So, what he does is he takes a subject within the greater subject and he analyzes it. He learns it through, piece by piece. So, for example, just as an example to recall, in the Tiferes, about Matan Torah, so we had a whole series of discussions about the Aseres Hadibras. We had a whole series of discussions about the period leading up to the giving of the Torah. So what he's going to be doing here, really, in Perek Shishi, is he's going to be beginning a series of chapters that are going to discuss the original Gezerah, the original decree that the Jewish people should go into Golos, which is found in Parshas Lech Lecha, in the story of the Bris Bein Habsarim. The covenant between the pieces, the covenant which Hashem made with Avram regarding the fact that Ger Yezaracha Be'eretz Le'elohem, that the Jewish people would be enslaved in a land which wasn't theirs for 400 years. So what he's going to do is he's going to learn through that Parsha. And today we're going to learn one segment, the first segment of learning through that Parsha. But where does he come how does he bring us there? Okay, so it'll be simple enough to say, because that's where Hashem made the decree that the Jewish people would be in Golos. But the way the Maral structures the Sefer, he brings it a little bit more sharply into focus how he gets there. Recall that Perek Hay, he really was dedicating to talking about the comparisons between how Avram Avinu had his experience of Golos in Ur Kasdim, and the Jewish people had their experience of Golos in Mitzrayim. And sort of drawing this parallel track between the way Avram Avinu did and the way the Jewish people did with Mitzrayim. So we already have something to explicitly be linking us here to Avram Avinu. He goes further, however, in posing the question at the beginning of this perek, which he's not going to answer in this perek. But in coming to answer this question, he goes to the Bris Bein Habsarim with Avram Avinu to eventually come and address this question. And he says that, Shleimus HaBriya Asher Bo HaYaratzen HaBayre Hu Yisayda Elam HaAvram Avinu Vishtal Shul Setzai Kedesh Ben Bochar Hashem. So we learned in the previous perek, remember, what was the contrast between Avraham and the people of the Kasdim? The contrast between them was that the Kasdim are Am Lo Hayah. They were like worthless, so to speak. Hashem, as the verse says, almost regretted having made them. They didn't have purpose. Whereas Avram Avinu is the purpose for which the entire world was created. So the Maral says, okay, so I don't get it. If Avram Avinu is the purpose for which the whole world was created, so then, how do we have the Olam Hafuch, Elyonim Lamata V'Tachtonim Lamala? How do we have the world turned upside down, where the ones who should be high are low, and the ones who should be low are high? How do we have the world turned upside down, that the Bnei Yisrael, the Bnei Avram Avinu, who are the purpose of the entirety of creation, should be underneath the Mitzrim, who we have not seen such tremendously complementary things about? How do you do that? How does that happen? Why does that happen? V'miyemar ha'odam, says the Maral, and if you'll say, well, we sinned. Why are we in Golus today? You have a question, why we're in Golus today? We're supposed to be the center of creation, but we sinned. Says the Maral, okay, look, for us we can understand. We were sinning, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, put us into Golus. But Golus Mitzrayim was Eitzah Amukah. Golus Mitzrayim was planned way in advance. Golus Mitzrayim was told to Avraham Avinu many generations before the Jewish people would go down to Mitzrayim. So it sounds like it's not just a spontaneous, so to speak, punishment for misdeeds which the Jewish people did, which therefore they deserved, even though they are the purpose of creation, but they have to go through some difficulty. No, it was planned in advance. Ve'eich nimtza davar zeh. So how do you have this kind of a thing, that the people who are supposed to be the strength of creation, the central purpose of creation, that they should be going through this phase where they are lost, essentially, within creation? Why does that happen? That's the Shaila which he wants to deal with. And as we said at the beginning this morning, Maral's not going to answer this question today. Maral is really setting up a look-see at the Bris Bein HaBesorim. As he writes at the end of his first paragraph, he says, "Mipnei ki shayre zeh shenigzar al zarei shel Avram, hu nizkar b'parshas Bris Bein HaBesorim." What's troubling me? What's troubling me is that the Jews went into Golus, but not simply because of sins which they just did then and there. Right? Golus because of sins that they did then and there, I understand. But they went into Golus, the Golus, you could look to sins, they sold Yosef, you know, whatever it is, you can look at those things. But what the Pasuk said well in advance of any of those things, Hashem said to Avram, you should know your children are going to go into Golus. The called shot. So if that's what's supposed to happen, why is it supposed to happen? Says Maral, if we want to understand why it was supposed to happen, we have to study where Hashem said it to us. So let's go back to Parshas Lech Lecha, to the Bris Bein HaBesorim, and let's learn through the Bris Bein HaBesorim to know where this comes from. So as we said in the beginning of this morning, this is the beginning of a series of prakim, a series of chapters the Maral is dedicating to the study of the Bris Bein HaBesorim, through which eventually he will answer this question as to why Golus was necessary for the Jewish people, even though the Jewish people are the purpose of creation. Right? Through looking at the Bris Bein HaBesorim, where that Golus was predestined, we're going to figure out not just that it happened, but why it happened. What was the purpose of it? What was there for? So what we're going to be focusing on today is the very beginning of the Parsha of the Bris Bein HaBesorim, and we're not going to get yet to this question, because we're not going to get yet to the portion of the Bris Bein HaBesorim where it says that we're going to go into Golus. Okay, so that's our little roadmap for today and for the next series of shiurim. We want to mention that the learning today is dedicated to Lili Nishmas Aryeh Lev Ben Eliyahu HaKohen and Lili Nishmas Shmuel Ben Yitzchak. Okay, so the Bris Bein HaBesorim, let's orient ourselves to the Bris Bein HaBesorim. Remember where it happened, because that's where this is going to start. The Bris Bein HaBesorim says, "Achar hadvorim ha'elo hoyodvar Hashem el Avram b'machaz ha'leimar." After these things, the word of Hashem came to Avram Avinu in a vision, saying, "Don't worry, Avram. Al tira Avram. Anoichi magen lach. I am your shield. Schorcha harbe ma'ed. Your reward is very great." Okay, Anoichi magen lach, I am your shield. What does that statement yield? A bracha that you said this morning. Baruch atah Hashem, magen Avraham. We bless Hashem as the shield of Avraham. And Hashem said, don't worry, I am your shield, your reward is great. Now, what's achar advar ma'ela? What is after these things? Well, the event which is described immediately previous to this in the Torah is the War of the Four Kings. Remember that Avram Avinu had separated from Lot, and then Lot settled in Sodom. Sodom was one of the five towns of the area, no jokes please, I think that was a joke. It was one of those five towns, and the Arba Malachim, the four kings who were obviously from the way the Torah describes, and certainly from the way Chazal saw it, were kings of huge, huge, you know, countries, empires. Right? The Chazal see, the Ramban brings the Medrash, that the four kings are a remez to the four kingdoms that would rule the world and would rule the Jewish people at different times, the Babylonian Empire and the Persian Empire and the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire. Right? And they have five kings of these five little Dorfalech, these five little villages. It's Tema Meira Admo Tzvayim Losha, you know, so Tzayar, excuse me, and these are five little towns, you know, in one small area. And the four kings came to war against to retake these cities or whatever it was. And that's the backdrop of the story. So Avram Avinu, who hears that his nephew Lot has been taken captive there in Sodom, by the four kings, Avram Avinu himself goes to war. He activates some of his students or his Eved Eliezer, whatever you're going to go with, and he wages war against the four kings, and he has a tremendous triumph. It's an amazing miracle, one of the great miracles which happens in the life of Avram Avinu, and Avram Avinu really, really pounds him. So, and when it's over, remember, he's greeted like a hero. He's greeted like a hero by Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem, who Chazal tells us was Shem Ben Noach. He's greeted like a hero by the king of Sodom. You know, give me the net souls. You can have all the money. No, you keep everything. Fine. So then, after Dvorim Leila, after these things, Hashem comes to Avram and says, Avram, don't worry. I am your shield. Your reward is very great. That's the first pasuk in what will become the Bris Bein Habsarim, right? So remember just quickly what develops. So Avram Avinu says, you know, what do you mean I'm going to have a lot of reward? I don't have children, so what can you give me? Right? And he goes on with that, and Hashem tells Avram Avinu he's going to have children. And Avram Avinu trusts Hashem. And then Avram Avinu is told by Hashem that your children are going to have this land as an inheritance. And Avram Avinu says, how do I know? And then Avram Avinu gets the Bris Bein Habsarim. Hashem says, take the animals, cut them in half. And he has this whole vision, and Hashem tells Avram, you should know that your children will be in goals for 400 years. Okay, so that's the flow here. So again, the Maral is trying to understand why we had to be in Golis. And don't just tell me it's a punishment because it was predicted so many years in advance of its happening. So he says, let's look at the Bris Bein Habsarim. So that's the Bris Bein Habsarim. There's a war. Avram wins the war. Hashem comes and reassures him. It becomes the promise of the land, which Avram Avinu then asks for a sign, whatever it is, and that has Hashem present the Golos, followed by the Gula, by the return to the land, which would be the ultimate hold that the Jewish people would have on the land. So the Maral is going to be studying through this Parsha, and now he has to start from the beginning, which is, after this, Hashem came to Avram and he reassured him. Why? So this is what we're going to be learning today, the Medrash, on what is the nature of this reassurance to Avram. Excuse me for a moment. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyah B'dvarei. Thank you. Says the Medrash, Rab Levi Amar Tarti V'Rabbanan Amru Chada. Rab Levi had two interpretations of this verse, and the Rabbanan had one. Rab Levi Amar, Lefi Shaya Avram Avinu Mispachet V'Amar, Toimer Ha'Uchlusin She'aragti, Hoyo Ben Tzadik Echad, Yorei Shamayim Echad. He said, I went to war. I killed people. Maybe one of the people I killed was a tzaddik. Maybe one of the people I killed was a person who was a God-fearing person. And I'm going to have to pay for that, so to speak. Moshe L'moha Davar Daima. So Hashem came and he reassured him. So says the Gemara, says the Medrash of Levi, let me explain to you what this is like. There was a person who was passing by the Pardesis, the orchards of the king. And he sees these bunches of thorns. Nutlan. So he takes away the thorns. He starts, you know, pulling away the thorns from the orchard. Vehetit HaMelech. And the king looks out the window at him. Hischil mitamer mipanav. So he starts hiding. Amar Lei, he said, in other words, he said, uh-oh, he's not happy with me, I'm taking his thorns. So the king says, Lama tamitamer, why are you hiding? Pelema yisitzarech sheyikaskesu. I was planning to hire workers to clear away these weeds. Achshav shekiskasta, boi vetel scharcha. Now that you did the weeding, come and take your reward. So he did something which he thought was virtuous, but then he got a look and he got nervous. He says, uh-oh, maybe this isn't so virtuous. And the king reassured him, you were doing my work. You did something very virtuous. So too here, Avram Avinu was nervous. He went and he fought this battle. Thought he was doing the right thing. But then he said, he took pause. Maybe because Hashem appeared to him. He says, uh-oh, Hashem's going to give it to me. I maybe destroyed somebody good. Those crowds of people that you killed, that population that you killed, they were like thorns. So that's his first interpretation. Avram Avinu had to be told by Hashem, don't worry. He was worried maybe he had done something wrong by killing these people. So Hashem said to him, don't worry. You're going to be okay. You did a good thing for me. Rabbi Levi Omer Uchri. And then Rabbi Levi said a second pshat, a different thing. He says, okay, whether I killed virtuous people or I killed guilty people, but I made enemies because I killed them, and now they're going to come back and they're going to try to have a rematch. Don't be afraid. I will protect you. Which, by the way, he didn't explain in the first pshat. He didn't explain why he tells him, "Don't. I'll be your protector." What was he afraid of? It wasn't that. He was just saying, just go say it and say, "Don't be afraid. You're going to be rewarded for what you did." Right here, he's explaining more specifically. You are worried. You're nervous. I'll protect you. If all the nations of the world will gang up, I'll wage war against them. Rabbanan Amru. Okay, so those are the two pshatim of Reb Levi. The first one was he was worried that he had done something wrong. The second was he was worried about revenge. Rabbanan Amru, if he show you Avram Avinu mispached, Avram Avinu was afraid for a whole different reason. I was thrown into the fiery furnace. I was saved from that. L'ravoin, I went to famine in Mitzrayim. V'nitzalti, and I was saved from that. Asisim u'chama yom ha'malochim, I fought with these kings. V'nitzalti, and I was saved. Shem atayim ekibalti schar ba'elam hazev, ein li klum ba'elam haba. So he was worried that he was using up all of his credits, all of his coupons. Right? I've used up all my reward. I'll have nothing left for me in a world to come. Right? I did mogain with you in this world. We'll see what that means, but your reward is intact for the world to come. As it says, Morav tuvcha asher tzafanta li reyecha. How great is the good that you have hidden away to those who fear you. Okay, so this is the Medrash. And the Medrash is coming to explain why this reassurance comes Achar Advorim Ha'ela. Achar Advorim Ha'ela. So Maral Kedarkai, find a Medrash like that with three Pshatim. Maral wants to take apart the Medrash and to explain what's going on, what's happening over here. What are these three Pshatim? So the first pshat the Maral says is that Avraham Avinu was worried that he did something wrong, and Hashem told him, don't worry, you did something which was very right. Says the Maral, you have to understand that Avraham Avinu, who's, you know, this great purpose, this person for around whom the whole world's purpose is defined, part of that is that kol drachav poinim el ha-hatzlocha. The way the Maral expresses it is, all of his paths lead to success. Avraham Avinu is the one. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not that he's taking away Avraham Avinu's Bechira. It's not taking away Avraham Avinu's free choice and sort of just, you know, pointing him in the right directions. But when Avraham Avinu is called upon to do something, and Avraham Avinu makes the right choices, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it work out. There's such a thing as a siyata deshmaya, a divine help, that even when you try and you do the right thing, it doesn't always come out just right. You know, Chazal say that a person has to worry and to daven that when he gives tzedakah, it should have good bang for its buck, right? That it should be to bnei adam mehuganim, that it should be to the most worthy of causes. The effort is the same, but the success, you know, for that you require siyata d'shmaya. For that you require divine help, and that divine help is something which is going to be put in the path of the Avram Avinu, of the person about whom the whole world is created. So Avram Avinu, he fought this battle. He knew he did what he had to do. And he was there. Nishba Achiv, Lot was taken captive. He had to go and he had to defend him. But was Avram Avinu worried that maybe in doing what he was supposed to, what he had to do, that not everything came out exactly right? Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avram Avinu, you are the one who I see as bringing the world, you know, to its fruition. So when you try, you will succeed. You have done the right thing. When you're going and trying to do the effort to do the right thing, you're actually, every step that you took, every person that you killed, that you destroyed, was getting rid of another thorn bush, another disturbing weed from my orchards. You've done the right thing. And Maral, you know, fills this out a little bit and explain something which is very chashuv, very significant. We discussed it, I don't know how long ago, I think sometime during the Netzach Yisrael, and we're not going to discuss it at length here today, but just briefly. Two parts. First part we discussed sometime during Netzach Yisrael, second part we discussed in more recently in the beginning of the Ner Mitzvah. Why do these four kings represent evil? Okay, that's the first shot of the Medrash. Rabbi Levi said, Avram was worried, I fought a battle, you know, to defend interests and so on and so forth, but maybe I've destroyed some good people in that battle. Maybe there were some good people on the other side. The answer is basically no, you were fighting a battle against evil. And you destroyed evil. You pulled again the weeds from my orchard, from my garden. How is it that these four kings represent evil? Okay, that's what has to be discussed here. So the Maral says two things. The first is about the nature of the battle of these kings, and the second is about the idea of the four kings. The first, again, we discussed in Netzach Yisrael a little bit. The second we discussed in the beginning of the Ner Mitzvah, which was about the four kingdoms. So, number one is understanding this battle of the four kings. And what you see there, it's a very, very important lesson, and again we go over it just briefly, is that that battle of the four kings could be seen in two possible lights. This is a big yesod, very relevant. Two possible lights. One is that it was a battle of empire. It was a battle of taxes, of property, of ownership. You have a kingdom, and then you have a renegade province that wants to separate from it, so the kingdom will go and try to assert itself, right? Just because Georgia wants to secede from the republics, you know, in Russia, that doesn't mean that the kingdom's going to let them do that, right? So that's what's happening over here. That's on one level. In fact, if you look in the Parsha, so you see that we speak about the Kedar LaOmer, the Hamalachim Asher Itar, Kedar LaOmer and his associates and the kings who were with him, that they came to wage this battle. It says they served Kedar LaOmer for 12 years, and then 13 years they rebelled, and on the 14th year this is what happened. They came. Kedar LaOmer came with the kings that were with him. But then there's a second tier of the battle, and that is a battle against Avram Avinu. These four kings were coming to wage war against Avram Avinu. What does that mean? Well, on two levels. First of all, Lot at that point in time was the heir apparent of Avram Avinu. At that point in time, he was the heir apparent. I mean, he was Avram Avinu's nephew, his brother-in-law. He was the one who had gone along with him. And they were going to battle against Lot. The Pasuk says, again, it describes it on two levels. They took Sodom and its wealth, and they left. And they took Lot, the nephew of Avram, right? And they left. There was a battle for Sodom, and there was a battle for Lot. If you doubt, on the second level was because they were smart. Maybe it was actually a direct battle against Avram. Not just against Lot, the nephew of Avram, because they didn't want to start with Avram, but it could have been a battle with Avram, because look what happened. When they went and they fought Lot, next thing happens, Avram Avinu joins the fray. So then, they brought Avram Avinu into the battle, and now they had a chance to fight against him. Why would we say that? Why don't we just view Lot as another citizen of Sodom, of this renegade province, that just happens to get caught up in this whirlwind, and then Avram Avinu goes to his defense, and that's what ends up happening. Because the Pasuk starts and it says, Vayhi bimei Amraphel melech Shinar. It lists the four kings, and it starts not with Kedar Laomer, who's mentioned first, who's mentioned as the one that these all kingdoms served, but it starts with Amraphel. Who is Amraphel? Says Rashi. Amraphel is Omar Po. He said, go fall in. What does that mean? Say Chazal, that's Nimrod. Nimrod was the king of Shinar. Shinar is Bavel. The Torah tells us explicitly that Nimrod was the king there. Amraphel was Nimrod's nickname. Amraphel had told Avram Avinu, go jump in the fire. And now he was back. And he was fighting Avram Avinu again. You want to know who Avram Avinu's nemesis is? It's Nimrod. From the beginning, it was Nimrod, the promoter of Avodah Zarah, against Avram Avinu, the promoter of monotheism. And here, there are two fronts to the battle. There's the front of the battle, which is led by Amraphel, which is the spiritual battle of evil against good, against Avram Avinu. And then, there's the battle of Kedar Laomer, who just wants his money, who just wants his property, whose battle is not a theological good against evil battle. His battle is a regular battle, but nested in that battle is the battle of Amraphel. And if you study that parsha, it's a beautiful thing. You look at it, you'll see the whole parsha is described in two layers. One part is the battle part led by Amraphel, the other is led by Kedar Laomer. The captivity of Lot, the captivity of Sodom. When Avram Avinu comes back from the battlefield, he's greeted by two kings. Who are they? One is Shem, who's the king of Yerushalayim, who's a Kayan, who comes to bless Avram Avinu for the triumph of good over evil, of God over the pagans. And then the king of Sodom comes and wants to talk to him about money and property. And he thanks him for winning back the property. Everything about the parsha exists on two fronts. Says the Maharal, so when Avram Avinu triumphs over these four kings, don't view it as, oh, you know, these guys, these kings, they wanted their money, they wanted their kingdoms. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the way kingdoms exist, and that's the way battles are fought, and maybe there was a righteous person in the bunch. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Avram Avinu, no, don't see it that way. Don't see it as simply this battle of these two. See it as the battle of good and evil. And trust me, everything that you destroyed there was evil that had to be destroyed, that had to be uprooted. That was getting rid of the kites, and that was getting rid of the thorns. I say this as something very significant because it's a significant read in Jewish history generally. Okay, I'll give you just two illustrations. On Tisha B'Av, you know, we learn about all these different periods of Jewish history. So many years ago, I did my research into the Crusades, and I took out all kinds of books, a few different books, to study about the Crusades, general books. You know that there are books on the Crusades where Jews aren't mentioned. because the Crusades were to go and redeem Jerusalem from the hands of the Muslims.
Now, I went to public school and learned about the Crusades. They never mentioned Jews.
Right. Right. But we know that as the Crusaders headed towards the Middle East, they traveled through Western Europe especially and found Jewish communities and destroyed Jewish communities. To us, the Crusades are a Jewish event, and not to mention that their destination was Yerushalayim. You know, I mean, a little bit of a connection to that as well, right? So, what's going on? Right? So there's a battle. And inside it, there's a battle, which is a battle against the Jews. And some people may not even notice it. There was a war called the Second World War. What was that battle? What was the purpose of that battle? There are two histories that can exist of the Second World War. There's a history of the Second World War, which is German expansionism, right? Especially after the humiliation of the First World War. And they wanted to go and expand and grow, Lebensraum, you know, everything in order to be able to go and take over the world. They wanted to build their empire, expand the German Empire. And then there's another part of the Second World War. When you ask a Jew about the Second World War, is he thinking about the conquest in North Africa? Is he thinking about German living space? Or is he thinking about the battle to eradicate the Jewish people? So which one was it? Right? So we might say, well, the proof is that it was the second. Why? Because when the war was ending, when the war was reaching its last stages, and Hitler had a choice about where to divert his resources, where to concentrate his resources, whether to salvage something for Germany. Instead, what did he do? He spent them on trying to destroy as many more Jews as he could before the whole thing collapsed. There's an Amraphel and there's a Kedar La'imer. There's the Kedar La'imer that will paint the battle as simply a battle of empire building. And then there's the Amraphel, which is the battle of the evil against the good. Avram Avinu himself was afraid because he killed people, because maybe this was just a Kedar La'imer battle. Maybe this was just a battle for space. And Hashem said to him, you have nothing to worry about. It wasn't that it was a battle for space and so on and so forth, and you were there defending your cousin that he shouldn't, your nephew that he shouldn't get swept up in that and lost, which is a legitimate war on their side and a legitimate war on your side and so on and so forth. This was the battle of Amraphel. It was the battle of the evil against the good. And therefore, when you were victorious and when you destroyed and when you killed and you destroyed the evil. Don't be afraid. Worthy of more discussion, but let's leave it for that. The second piece of the Maral is that it's the four kings. And that, if you recall, we discussed in the beginning of the Ner Mitzvah. The beginning of the Ner Mitzvah, the first half of the Ner Mitzvah, discusses the four exiles, which, parenthetically, we see those four kings, Ramban brings, that those four kings are actually representative of the four Malchios, the four kingdoms of history. And he says, why four? Because Golus is the dispersion. Golus is the lack of the presence of Hashem in this world. And that is represented by the Arba Kanfes Haaretz, the four corners of the earth. Geula is bringing together from the four corners of the earth, is unifying those poles by the central point, by the one. And that's why we discuss it this way. That's why we speak about Tayu, Vavayu, V'chayshach Alpenei, Sahayim, right? The four elements of scattered, of not being there, not having it together, as opposed to the one, the Achdus, that's there in the middle. So the fact that there are four Goliaths represents that that's something that you, the Avram, who's the Echad, have to overcome. Okay, so that's phase one. So Avram Avinu was worried that he had done something wrong, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Avram Avinu, you were doing something right. when you, who are the force of good and purpose that's there in the world, when you fight a battle and you're doing what's the right thing, what you're trying to do, you have to understand it's even much bigger than what you're doing. It's even much bigger than what you think you're doing. Because you represent all of the good, and in fact, in this case, they represented all of the evil. And so, don't worry about any of the consequences of that you did something wrong, because you were representing me and you did something very right. Number one. Number two. Yeah.
Is that the same as saying that if you killed people, maybe somebody was tzaddik, but since the war, you know, you can't. It was the right thing to do, so therefore, tzaddik, or that there was
no. That's not what it's saying. That's what Avraham Avinu thought. Avraham Avinu thought, look, I fought a war. It was a legitimate war, but there were some things that got damaged that, you know, really should have stayed. And Hashem said to him, no, it was all evil. It was all evil. Hashem wasn't saying to him, it's necessary collateral damage. If it's necessary collateral damage, he may be held to account for it. Lamaisa, a bad thing came through his hands.
Oh, but if
even though, by and large, what he did was right.
I mean, if it's a German army, you know, it could be somebody there. You know.
Look, there's two. There's in the ethics of war, you can't say that you're not going to fight the war because maybe you're going to kill
right.
someone who's a tzaddik. I don't mean he didn't have second thoughts before going into battle, but on the other hand, when they go to war and they end up killing, let's say, women and children. Right in contemporary parlance, they end up killing women and children. They are innocent victims to the war. They didn't mean to kill them. They tried not to kill them, but they killed them. So they say, "Look, we did what we're supposed to do. So you're not supposed to be prosecuted for war crimes. They did the right thing." But that does that mean klape shmaya that nothing bad happened? Of course, something bad happened. And Avraham Avinu, that something like that should happen through his hands, he's worried about that. There's a stain on a person if that happened. Again, it doesn't mean that he would be able to do it any differently or should have done it any differently. But still, Hashem says, no, there's no but still here. Because what you destroyed was evil.
What about David and Malik, that he wasn't able to build the Mikdash?
Yeah. You could bring that as that indication, you know, in the other direction. It's not pashut that it indicates that there was anything wrong with what David HaMelech did, but the idea is if you can't use a sword to cut the stones of the Mizbeach, it's because the Mizbeach is there for Shalom, and one who waged war stands as using a different midah. It may be a justified midah, but it's a different midah. That's a way to understand. Or it could be, yeah, maybe it's because there was collateral damage in those battles. I don't know. Okay. So that's number one. The second part was that Avraham Avinu was worried that actually those guys would come and get him. And there the emphasis more is on Anachim Mogen Lach, I'm going to protect you. So what's the idea there? So he says, first of all, it's like a Mogen, a shield, that nothing will be able to affect it. And the idea is, says the Maral, when we say Magen Avraham or Magen Avos, it's because if Avraham Avinu was the beginning, was the foundation of everything that would come to pass and would grow and would become something in the world, that's what Avraham Avinu was. Avraham Avinu is the ultimate in being. He can't be destroyed. You're worried about somebody coming and attacking you and destroying you? You can't be destroyed. With you goes the world. You're the Yesod. You're the foundation of everything. So Avraham Avinu, Anochi Mogen Lach, there's no world without you. You can't be destroyed. So again, the first one was Avraham was worried maybe he did something wrong. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, everything you're doing is to make the world happen, right? You didn't do anything wrong. The second is you're worried about being damaged, about being killed. You can't be killed, you can't be destroyed. You're the aside from which everything has to come. And he goes and he discusses this a little bit more, how Avraham Avinu is the Rishon and the Yesod, and so on and so forth. Okay. Third is the Pshat of the Rabbanon. And the Pshat of the Rabbanon, what the Rabbanon said was that Avraham Avinu was worried that he had used up his schar, he had used up his reward. Right? Avraham Avinu said, I fought Nimrod, I had to go to the fiery furnace, and I had to be saved from that, I had to be saved from famine, now I have to be saved from this battle. I mean, how much credit do I have? So I'm going to use it all up. So how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu reassure him? He says, Anoichi Magen Lach Schorcha Harbe Ma'ayd, I am your shield, your reward is very great. What does that mean? So here the Maral teaches us some very important yesidus, a couple of very important principles. The Maral begins by invoking something which we said this morning, which we say every morning. Eilu dvarim she'adam eichel perisein ba'olam hazeh va'keren kayemes le'olam haba. There are things that a person enjoys their benefits in this world, even as the core principle remains intact in the world to come. In other words, if Avraham Avinu is worried that he's using up his reward, he's viewing it as, again, that he's eating away at the principle. But Chazal tell us there are things that people do that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them plenty of reward in this world without at all affecting the principle. And those are the kinds of things which Avraham Avinu did. And that's why Hashem tells him he doesn't have to worry. What are those things? What are those things that, you know, we do them, but the principle remains intact for the Olam Haba? Kibra ve'em, gemilus chasadim, hashgames beis hamed v'shachas v'arbis, hachnasas archim, v'ikr cholim, hachnasas kala, levoyas hameis, iyun tfila, hava sholem v'nam chaver, v'salmu tera k'neger kulam. Right? What's that? It's a big long list. It includes 10 things. Kibra ve'em, gemilus chasadim, hashgames beis hamed v'shachnasas archim, v'ikr cholim, hachnasas kala, v'yas hameis, iyun tfila, hava sholem v'nam chaver, talmu tera. 10 things. That's what we say in the what we quote, which is a brisa. In the Mishnah, in Maseches Peah, which is really the segue of the Eilu Dvarim She'ein Lahem Shiur, it says Eilu Dvarim She'adam Eichel Perisein Bel Maseh Vakim Se'elam Haba, and it lists only 3 things plus Talmud Torah: Kibra Ve'em, Gemilus Chasadim, and Ava Shalom and Amchaver. Now, all of these things on this list are things which are Bein Adam L'Chaveray. They're all things where you see the impact of the mitzvah which is being done here in this world. And so, the schar is also going to be there for these things here in this world. You know, I like often to say over what the Rambam says here in his Pirush HaMishnayos. The Rambam in his commentary says that the reason why these things are rewarded in this world without taking away from the Schar in Olam Haba is because Schar is always in Olam Haba. The Schar is not in this world. But what does it mean that the person therefore does have Schar, that he's Eichel Mifereseyin V'Olam Hazeh, that he does have Schar in this world? Says the Rambam, because if a person is nayeg minak tayv, if a person behaves nicely towards other people, you know what happens? People behave nicely towards them. If a person is someone who's always there for others, the kari yikbarune, the safed yisbedune, a person is there for others, then other people want to be there for them as well. So, says the Rambam, of course there are going to be benefits to it in this world. But of course, like other mitzvahs, the ikar schar, spiritual and everything else, is there for the person in the Olam Haba. The Sparis, it's not the Iker Schar. It's not the main Schar. The Maral explains it a little bit differently. And Lefidarkoi, according to the way he sees things. And he explains that the idea is, because there are different kinds of mitzvahs that a person does. There are mitzvahs that the person does that are not appreciable in the fullest sense in this world. If a person wears tzitzis, or if a person keeps Shabbos, or something like that, that's a mitzvah bein adam lamokim, it's a mitzvah for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the natural arena for feeling the consequences, the positive consequences of these mitzvahs, is in Olam Haba, is in another place. But a mitzvah which is having within it also this aspect of bringing good in this world, as Maral writes, like my mitzvahs tzitzis v'suka v'lulav she'en nira b'em atoy b'elam hazeh umi p'nei she'lai nira b'em atoy b'elam hazeh en le'ma le'mech v'erseen b'elam hazeh. He says there you don't see the good of them in this world, you do it for religious reasons, you know, so therefore you don't necessarily get the benefits from it in this world. But kibud av ha'em gemilus chasadim havo ha'shalom, there Dovik b'em tov b'inyan ha'olam hazeh, that brings good in this world, and because it brings good in this world to others, so it's appropriate that the person should also get benefits from it in this world. That's the way that fits. The reward fits the deed, like the punishment, the opposite, heaven forbid, fits the crime. That's the idea, the way the Maharal says it. So therefore, says the Maharal, mi lanu gadol me Avram, who's greater than Avram Avinu? Avram Avinu was known for his chesed, right? That was his thing. So if Avram Avinu was known for his chesed, so he's got this path down of being able to have benefits in this world while the principle remains intact for the Olam Haba. So therefore Hashem says to Avram, don't worry, you'll be fine. Schorcha arbe ma'id. Yeah, of course you're getting benefits in this world, but you still have plenty left in store for you for the world to come. Maral, of course, Lefidarkoi, explains that we have three different categories that are given. We have kibud av ha'em, gemilus chasadim, and havo asholem yadonam l'chaveri. Says Maral, kibud av ha'em, why have the three categories? Kibud av ha'em, he has two different tacks. Kibud av ha'em is a kindness, a good deeds that you do to somebody that you're obligated to do for them. You owe it to your parents. Gemilus chasadim is to people who you have no obligation to at all. Right? Person is needy, but they have no specific responsibility to you, but you go out of your way and you're generous to them to help them. And havah sholem, he says, benom chavera, is something in between. Because if there's tension and difficulty between people, it's true that it doesn't connect to you as much, but it's something which is very wrong that it should exist. And when you try to fix it, so then it's not chiyuv gomor, but einai poter mimenu. Ki sonei amachloikes klapi ha-shamayim, ach odom yesh lo yishtar abinyin ha-shalom shalei amachloikes b'ilom, avu chiyuv gomor einai. There's a person has to make efforts to get rid of argument. That even if it's not his argument, even if it's not an argument which he has with somebody else, it's not something should give some world. It's something which Hashem hates. Now you might say a person also has to make sure that there's no poverty in the world. But here the Maral says it's considered even to some degree even more compelling, because it's such a look. Some people have and some people don't have. That's in a certain sense the way it is. So it's very nice when a person goes and helps somebody who doesn't have to give it, to fill in the gap, right? But argument is terrible. Argument is corrosive. It's horrible, and that a person has to try to undo. So that's why he sees it. Obliged, voluntary, and something in between. And then he gives a second interpretation of the three categories. Again, Lefidarkoi, which is, one is chesed, which you do to those who are great. Right? Our attitude towards our parents is one of respect and reverence. So we're doing kindness to those who are above us. And then, gemilos chasadim, is to those who are, in some sense, we might see as being lacking, as being below us. And then the third is shalom. Hava shalom. Hashva shalom is with those who are equal to you. So, because usually you don't have fights between the big ones and the small ones. You have the fights between people who view themselves as being even peers. Right? It's very easy, like, to give honor to somebody who's so much greater than you. Right? Or somebody who's lesser than you. You know, you could be very cordial with them because you're not threatened by them. Right? Shalom, tension starts between peers where there's a sense of being threatened. And so he says it's for above, for below, for peers. Again, typical kind of division which the Maharal sees in the words of Chazal. But says the Maharal, Avram Avinu did all of these things. Kibud Av V'Em, remember we had a whole discussion a couple of times ago about how Avram Avinu needed to leave his father. Hashem had told him, you don't have to worry about Kibud Av V'Em. Now that's not a positive act for which he gets yes sir? That's not a positive act. Eric?
Yeah, okay.
That's not a positive act for which he gets rewarded, but on the other hand, it's not an issue. You don't have to worry about not having that. And then Gemilus Chasadim, come on, Avram Vinu's nickname is Chesed. And finally, Hava Shalom Yom Chaverai is Avram Avinu. Chazal say in different places that Avram Avinu unified the whole world. He was taught the whole world monotheism. He was the Av Hamoin Gaim, the father of a multitude of nations. So because Avram Avinu's impact in this world was this way, so he could have reward in this world. And he didn't have to worry about taking away from what he had in Olam Haba. But I haven't really explained it fully. Maharal hasn't really explained it fully. Because you can still ask and say that, okay, so these things deserve reward in this world, because the actions done in this world, the ramifications of the action are felt in this world, so therefore it makes sense that the reward should be in this world. But why shouldn't it take away from that which is there in the Olam Haba? So, the what?
That's where it says Shalom Shir. Therefore, it doesn't detract.
It doesn't detract. It's a fact that it doesn't detract. But why doesn't it detract? Yeah, we could use the Mishnah and say, well, you don't worry, you get reward for it in this world, and nothing will be taken away, and because these are your things, you don't have to worry about it. But why not?
Compounded.
Why not? We understand that that it should be felt in this world. But why not on the expense of what happens in the other world?
Isn't it compounding, so therefore it inures to the, it continues to go for the next world? The tzadot of that. You bring shalom and people keep getting along, or you help somebody who's an ani, no longer an ani. So
okay, that's a nice pshat. It's a nice pshat. It's not what the Maharal says here, but it's a nice pshat.
That's only if it does.
Hmm?
That's if it's permanent.
True.
Yeah.
You get one meal or something.
And it's also assuming that the ikar is coming from the Olam Haba. It's only the compound
that you're getting back. Right. So the Maharal says like this. He says that chesed is the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives and gives and gives, and it doesn't take away anything. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives, he's not using up. The mid of the goodness of Hashem gives, and it produces fruit and doesn't take away. Therefore, further, whose gemel chesed eats peres by lo mazev, and that's the way it works. It's there. It's there, and it continues, and it doesn't take away. That's the nature of chesed. Chesed is something that loy mechal yekarna, right? That's the way Rav Huttner discusses this in one of his mamorim. I don't remember exactly where it is. I think maybe even in Rosh Hashanah, but I'm not sure. But he says chesed is something which just doesn't use up. That's the Midas Chasdei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what the Maharal seems to be saying over here is that because this is the specifically for those aspects of chesed, it gives and it's not a draw. You know, when you have promises that when a person gives tzedakah, he gets it back. Why? Because, again, the person's being dovek, the person as a giver is being like the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's giving is not drawing on anything. It's a giving which is sharing, which is ner le'echad, ner le'meya, the candle for one is the candle for 100. It doesn't take away anything. By giving, you're only spawning. You're not redistributing. That's not the way it works. And that's a very, very big yisai that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Avraham, you know, don't worry about it being used up. The Maharal here says something, and I want to therefore say something which it's a little different than the Maharal, a little different than the way Rav Huttner says it, closer, I think, to the way Rav Huttner says it, but I think it's very important and pshat to consider. Maharal points out that it says mogein, and mogein in Aramaic, in the Gemara, means chinam, means for nothing. And Hashem says to Avram, anochi mogein lach, means it's for free. I'm taking care of you for free. It's not on account, which is this idea that you're using it, but it's not using anything up. You're going to get, you get it, and it doesn't take anything away from what you have already. Nachim mogein lach, it's chinam, it's free. But let me try to explain it a little bit in a different way. So, everybody here is married, right? Everybody here is married. So you have a relationship with your wife. Your wife has a cold. Shabbos is over. You wash the dishes. You know. See? Rest, you know, I'll wash, I'll take care of the dishes. I'll do the laundry. So what happens now? So there's two possible approaches. One approach is, my wife, she's not feeling well. I did the laundry. I did the dishes, I took care of her. The other is that you have a little, you know, a little green book, right? And on the front of the cover of the book, it says, marriage savings account, right? And in your marriage savings account, you just put in a deposit. You put in a deposit. You say, okay, dishes, that's 3 points. And laundry is 6 points, right? So that means I have now 9 points. Which means what?
This is only 3 points?
Well, these points. Which means that, you know, if I'm a little whatever, I can... You know, I usually do the thing, you know, like taking out the trash, but, you know, I feel like I have now credit for a task of to take out the trash 4 times. Right? Right? You know, or something like that. Huh?
Good luck.
You know, what I mean is that the meter is always running. You're always viewing it as I do something, you do something, I do something, you do something. You know, I remember it still, when I think about it, it still sends shudders down my spine for various reasons. But the New York Times Magazine a couple of years back had an article about the shared parenting movement, where people decided that there was no such thing really as men and women, it's just some kind of a fluke. And therefore, you know, a husband and wife have children together, they should share all their duties with what comes to charming perfectly equally. And the woman should take off so many days of work, and the man should take off so many days of work, and the woman should get up so many times during the night, and the man should get up so many times during the night. So besides for sending shudders down the spine because of just eradicating the differences between men and women, and, you know, when God created the world, that a woman could have a child, hold a child in her stomach, and then that a woman would be able to nurture the child, like they think it's just like a fluke and she wasn't given any special skills other than a womb and a breast, you know, in order to do this, otherwise, you know, there's nothing about it. But a marriage where you say you do, I'll do, you do, I'll do, what happens to that kind of a marriage? That marriage is doomed to failure. What happens with Rachmana Litzlan if the wife gets sick. Not a cold. And for 4 years, she's able to make very few deposits. Only withdrawals. What's going to happen to the relationship then? A marriage which is built on a bank account will go out the window. What's a marriage built on? I have a connection with you. I have a commitment to you. I do for you. The meter isn't running. It's not like you deposit this much, I'm going to do for you this that much. We have a connection. We have a relationship. So I do for you. Period. I'm not looking at the meter. Avram Avinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he knew he did many good things. So he knew he had a reward coming to him. But look at the rewards which he had. He was saved from the fiery furnace. He was saved from the famine. He was saved from the four kings. He said, uh-oh, there goes my reward. Hashem said, Avram Avinu, Al Tira Avram, Anoichi Mogein Lach, what I do for you without counting. I do it for you for free. You know, it could be that there's such a thing out there for some people that the way it works is, right? Chazal tell us over and over again, a Rasha, for any good thing which he did, he will be paid. He will be rewarded. That's why sometimes you see good things happening to bad people. Because for everything which he does, he'll be rewarded. What's that? He made a deposit, he has a right to withdraw, equal to the deposit which he put in. But with you, Avram Avinu, it's not deposits and withdrawals. With you, it's because you're my man. You're what the world is about. You can never ruin it. We have a connection. Al tira, Avram. You don't have to worry, Avram Avinu. We have a connection. We have a relationship. It will be there. Not limited by the things which you, the draws which you make. Mogein Avram. It's something you have to think about when you say the first bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei. That's what the first bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei is. Elikei Avram, Elikei Elikei Avisenu, Elikei Avram, Elikei Yitzchak, Elikei Yaakov. We're describing an ongoing connection which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with us. That it's not just, okay, look, we do good things, Hashem does for us. But this is the same connection for the past 3,000 and almost 4,000 years since Avram Avinu. We have it. Hashem remembers the kindness of the forefathers and he'll bring redemption to their children. There's such a thing, and it's not because of, as Taisva says, not because of Zechus Avais, but because of Bris Avais. It's not because of the merits of the forefathers. Those could have gotten used up. Tamas Chus Avais. But Bris Avais Leitama, but the relationship Hashem made with the Avais never runs out. That never runs out. And that's why we say, blessed are you Hashem, Mogein Avram, who shielded Avram, who made Avram invincible, like the Maral said, because he can't be destroyed. He's my whole world. He can't be destroyed. But also, Mogein Avraham, I have the connection with him. So there's no meter running. There's no meter running. That's the beginning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's communication to Avram and the Bispinus.
Is that also true with Hashem's relationship with the Jewish people? On Yom Kippur, for example?
Absolutely. It's the same thing. It's the reason why we have a